Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Contact. This is your hostess with the mostest, Leslie Mitchell Clark, and I am thrilled that you have tuned in this evening because we have an absolutely fabulous guest. I just returned from Los Angeles, by the way, where I had a marvelous Yankee Thanksgiving with my dear sister, the talented vocalist Karen Mitchell. But I'm very thrilled to be back here in the Northeast. We are broadcasting from Toronto, but I know we have friends listening in as far-flung locales as Australia and Hawaii and in South America. So, indeed, we are thrilled that you are with us as we explore the fascinating world of ufology and metaphysics. Anyway, this evening, I am thrilled to tell you that my guest is John Raffanello. And John Raffanello is a fascinating guy. He is based in Los Angeles, and he's a former space electronics engineer. And he initially worked on the American space team, which developed the guidance system of the Saturn SIBB moon rocket. And so he is, by profession, a nuclear physicist. And he has also done an incredible amount of work holding seminars and workshops, teaching courses, tens of thousands of hours on one-to-one life skills, mastery counseling, and training. He worked for Disney. He contributed to the Epcot project. And, of course, he has also, since 1985, and this would go along with his metaphysical pursuits, he has been channeling a ultra-terrestrial or extraterrestrial entity, and he's going to be talking about that aspect of his work primarily this evening. I would say also that John has guided hundreds of individuals into ways of expanding the human ability far beyond conventional realms, which of course involves training and honing your psychic abilities. And this particular work was later codified under WanderTech's Practical Metaphysics umbrella. So WanderTech is John's website. It's also his the umbrella under which many, many businesses operate, including those in the metaphysical realm. So we are very, very honored to have John here this evening. And we're going to be talking to him shortly. And I would also like to thank everybody who tuned in last week. We had part deux, that's part two, of the show's producer, Wes Roberts. He was chatting extensively about one of his abduction scenarios that actually we did not uncover through past life regressions. It's something that he has a conscious memory of, and he's discussed part one and part two, and before too long we'll be moving into part three. So that may be next week. So we've got lots of cool stuff coming up for you on Contact in the coming weeks. And as always, we would really love to hear from you. So I'm going to give you the guest call-in number, which is 424, and better put a 1 in front of that unless you're in Los Angeles, 1-424-220-1861. And you can just give us a jingle. Probably about the half-hour point we'll be taking some calls. We want to be sure to explore all of these marvelous aspects that John Raffanello has to talk about. And of course, if you are interested in finding more out about myself, Leslie Mitchell Clark, and the show, you can always log on to www.lightworkhypnosis.com. And there's a lot of information there about what I do as far as past life regressions and also as far as working with abductees or experiencers. So that's all going there. Now, also, if you tuned in last week, Wes Roberts and I talked a good deal about an organization that we are founding, and we're just in the preliminary stages right now, but the organization is going to be called Contact Group International. It's not really a self-help group kind of deal, but more of a think tank. And so if you'd like to know more information about that, please feel free to email the producer of Contact, and that's Wes Roberts, of course, and his email is kadath, K-A-D-A-T-H, @gmx.com. All right, so I can see by my little switchboard here that we've got John on the line. I'm just going to pick that up and greet him. He is talking to us live from Los Angeles. Good evening, John.
Hi there, Leslie.
Okay.
Can you hear me fine? I'm on the speakerphone.
All right, I can hear you. It looks like you've got everything all sorted out there, and you've got your Blog Talk Radio website up, I'm sure, and I hope some of your good buddies are going to be listening in this evening as you chat about different stuff.
Well, I hope so, too. And, I sent them out a very quick email about a half an hour ago, a little bit late, but maybe some of them will tune in.
I'm sure. And if not, you know, as I said before, you can always download this show or any of the other episodes of Contact on iTunes. It's available for you to listen to at your convenience, which is the beautiful thing about non-terrestrial radio. So anyway, John, now I know you live in Los Angeles now, but tell me a little bit about yourself. Are you in fact from L.A.?
No, I was actually born in Bristol, Connecticut, blessed with an incredible family. Yeah, my father was a bookie, Big Johnny Rapp, one of the first characters you ever want to meet. And my mother was a saint, really, literally. She was. Her name was Beatrice, and she would sign her names Be Happy, B-E-A.
Oh, God bless her. How lovely is that? Now, did you end up going to school in the East Coast, or?
Well, I started there. I went to St. Anthony's Grammar School and High School, Roman Catholic High School, and then came out to California to do my first engineering degree in avionics, space electronics, and then went on there to study metaphysics and quantum physics, and studied with about every genius and crackpot that I could get a hold of trying to figure out which was
Now, I know this isn't mentioned specifically in your bio, but I know that we have actually, I've been fortunate enough to actually meet you in person about a year ago, and we did discuss that you had also done some work in past life regressions.
Oh, yes, tremendous amount, actually. I processed many, many people through past lives, in-between lives, parallel realities, did a lot of work myself, and that was quite fascinating because being brought up as a Roman Catholic, I didn't believe in past lives and didn't really even know why because the subject never came up. But thanks to the work of a number of people in past life regressions, I learned how to do it and guided many people into them as part of my research.
Mm-hmm. Boy, it's endlessly fascinating, is it not? And also, you know, the thing that I think I find so rewarding about doing past life regressions is the incredible opportunity for healing and resolution, because people walk around with a lot of stuff, and that stuff can't always be easily explained by their experiences in this physical life. And it's amazing how, I won't say how easy it is, but with proper techniques, it's quite amazing how accessible that soul information is, you know, once you get someone to a certain point of relaxation and the membranes that separate our deep memory from our current memory dissolve, and it's really amazing work.
It is. It's absolutely wonderful. I've been blessed with seeing many miracles occur right before my eyes, all sorts of healings and amazing psychic experiences that people had that they never even knew that one was capable of. So it's a very exciting subject. But then it even goes beyond that. It's quite amazing. I've been researching this sort of stuff since even before I went to college. Used to read books like Stranger Than Science that would explain these unexplained phenomena.
I was also raised Catholic, and there is, I would have to say, even though, and I should mention, by the way, reincarnation was part of the early Christian Church's doctrine until the Council of Nicaea, when it was thrown out. So reincarnation and also same-sex marriage were part of the early church.
even more than that. I mean, it's quite fascinating that some of the hidden doctrine had to do with the idea that the second coming of Christ was truly your discovery of yourself as a Christ consciousness capable of anything. Right? So,
I tend to agree. In fact, the word Christ itself is, of course, it goes back to Sanskrit, and it really just means like enlightened one. So, in fact, there could be many Christs, or it could refer, as you say, to a Christ consciousness that that each of us has, you know, within ourselves. And of course, now we're finally, many of the things that you have known and written about finally are, many of them, able to be proven and illustrated by technology. Now that we have the real-time mapping of the brain, we know that when people are being regressed in past life regressions, that their memory centers are firing, not their creative centers. We know that the soul exists, if you will, outside the body, in a sense, on the quantum level. Hence the Akashic record. So there are many things that are able now to be photographed, sensed, measured, felt, which kind of leads me to believe that we are, in fact, moving towards a new era of enlightenment. What do you think about that, John?
I think you're absolutely correct. You know, it even goes beyond that. I remember when I was working on my doctorate paper, I had quite a time finding physicist that would support it. It was called Including Consciousness in Our General Theory of Physics, because the original classic physics divorced consciousness from the experiments, and quantum physics was born when it was acknowledged that consciousness could potentially have an effect on the physical reality, and then it was demonstrated that it did. So metaphysics, which is considered to be not a legitimate science by many, is now coming closer to quantum physics, which is attempting to demonstrate that the consciousness actually does affect the physical reality, and in the ultimate literally creates the reality that we experience day to day, that our consciousness is energizing the reality into existence, much in the way our television tunes to a particular vibratory frequency and gives us a channel 2 or channel 4, that we now are developing the ability, or activating an intrinsic ability, to tune to one reality or to energize one, almost any, what has been called parallel realities, but we're actually our programmed realities that we can experience. And probably for each individual, the only proof of any of this is actually experiencing it to be true.
Indeed. I mean, we are, I guess, multiphasic beings. I know myself, and, you know, I've been a transcendental meditator for, oh boy, probably 30 years. And there are times when I won't say I leave my body, because it's not really like that. It's more like I experience multiple versions of myself simultaneously.
Lovely.
It's extremely blissful. I mean, I don't want anyone to think that we're talking about anything that's fear based here. Everything that we are talking about, these concepts are really, they're in no conflict with religion. That, you know, although, you know, we could talk about ancient astronauts, and I do have some ideas, of course, about religion, but I did want to focus a lot. Now, John, I know that you have talked with me about extraterrestrial beings, and you had mentioned that since roughly 1985, you have been involved in channeling a particular, should I call him an ultra-terrestrial being?
Actually, he's a really close friend, and you can call him anything you want. Normally, considered to be an extraterrestrial. Actually, I did not begin channeling in 1985. I was actually introduced to Daryl Anka, who channeled an entity that called himself Bashar. And as the years went on, I found that I was developing the ability to channel him also, up to the point where I could have a conversation which is in many ways clearer than the one I'm having with you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could other entities also. Strangely enough, I had done that back in research that I had done back in 1965 and 66, and I had some amazing, if you want to call them, telepathic experiences. They're actually just tuning into another's reality, much in the way a television tunes into a particular station. But as far as the entity Bashar was concerned, that channeling developed after a couple few years of experiences with Daryl's channeling.
I see. And Bashar, is he? Have you gotten some information about? You know, because I believe there are many different groups of extraterrestrial and ultra-terrestrial beings that interact with us in various ways. Some have a not-so-nice agenda. Some have even evolved out of the point, really, of needing bodies, per se. So Bashar, has he given you some indication about where he originates or his home base, as it were?
We could probably go on for many, many days. But Bashar basically represents himself as being from a planet called Esasani, which translates into our language living light. The planet itself is rotating around a star approximately 300 light years beyond the constellation that we call Orion.
Mm.
And their society, they live in ongoing ecstasy. They have no war, no suffering, no problems.
Wow.
In fact, it was a fun story once. At one point I was asking Bashar what he was getting out of these interactions, and he said, oh, you know, many things. He says, you know, as often we have referred to you as the masters of limitation. And he said, some of
really?
You said a derogatory thing. And he says, it is not at all. He said, you are the most focused civilization that we have yet come in contact with. And he considers every experience, every reality, to be a valid experience. But he said recently, you see, he represents himself as someone who communicates with many civilizations, ours being one of the civilizations. And he said that they'd recently gone into communication with a civilization they had not been in communication with before, and he said for the first time in 300 years in their history, they got into what we would call an argument.
Really?
That they had an argument in 300 years, which in itself was quite incredible. He said, because he said this new civilization that they had contacted would not believe that it was possible for someone to not know that they created their own reality. How could a person have an upset, be sitting in a room upset with their wife or their boss or the IRS, and not know that they were creating it? They had to be obviously creating their upsets and their problems. But he said this civilization would not believe that it was possible for a person not to know that they created the entire reality they were experiencing. He said that.
And this was not us. This was these are somebody else.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Convinced them that we have pulled it off. And they found this amazing, that we could create upsets, we could create experiences, and at the same time not have a conscious awareness of what we were creating and that we were the creators. So it fascinated them. So.
Oh, my goodness. Now, do they in their society, do they have or in their race rather, do they have still corporeal form? Do they travel in space vehicles, or are they so far beyond that that they slipstream through quantum dimensions or something of that nature?
Well, when we first contacted them, yes, they were in a corporeal form. They do have physical bodies. They're smaller than ours. They're whitish-grayish skin, the large eyes that have often been portrayed in alien portraits.
Uh-huh.
Their planet is a complete garden planet. They do not put any industry of any kind on the planet. It is maintained in a beautiful, totally natural state. Their technologies are in motherships that are in orbit around their planet. So
Oh.
their planet's maintained in a beautiful environment. And one of the fascinating things is that they are in such beautiful rapport with each other. They have no upsets, no concept of creating any kind of negative judgment or any kind of negativity. And when an individual wishes to create something or wishes to do something, the entire resources of the planet are put at their disposal simply because they choose to create it, and for no other reason. Wouldn't you like that? Right?
Wow, isn't that and a completely harmonious way of going about something. Now, do they reproduce or
reproduce in much the same way we do?
Uh-huh.
Much the same way. Now, they are evolving out of, as I said, this was when we originally contacted them, or they contacted us, which was back in 1985.
Bashar mm-hmm.
said that our mass consciousness, meaning the aggregate consciousnesses of all of the people and plants and anything that's conscious on the planet, from
mm-hmm.
their point of view, made a decision to evolve into a civilization similar to those, to theirs, I'm sorry. And that
mm-hmm.
set up vibratory frequency that enabled us to go into contact with them. And they claim that this is the common way of communicating with civilizations. They tune to what they call the signature vibration of a biological entity.
Yes.
And I've been training people to do this now for years. It's actually quite simple when you know the nature of it. But he said
mm-hmm.
we were going to evolve into a civilization similar to those that set up the similar vibrations and enabled us to link and communicate with each other, those that were willing to do so. So.
How fascinating. Do you think that each... biological or spiritual being in this diverse universe, do you think that each civilization has a signature vibration?
Absolutely. The system itself, Earth, has a signature vibration. Actually, it's an amazingly simple. I've trained people in it. If you'll get, for instance, as an example, get the feeling of Hawaii. When
mm-hmm.
you think of Hawaii, do you get a particular feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Now think of New York.
Yeah.
You notice that that's a different feeling.
Oh, completely, yeah.
Yes, and you think of Chicago, you get a different feeling.
Yep.
You think of Paris, you get a different feeling. You think of
mm-hmm.
Easter, you get a feeling. You think of
yeah.
Christmas, you get a different feeling. What you're
yes.
doing is actually connecting in to the signature vibration of the location or the subject or the event. Right? It is that simple.
Yes.
Right?
So it's all vibration.
It's all vibrations. You know,
that's not unlike, I'm sure, of course, not unlike perhaps some concepts in the Seth material, if you read any of
yes.
that, and that channeling
yes,
that Jane Roberts did.
One of the things with Bashar is he comes across totally clean. Daryl was what was called a tensor channel, meaning that he would literally go to sleep and go unconscious, and the information would come through purely as if you were talking to the entity on a cellular telephone. There was none of Daryl's beliefs or concepts that interfered with the communication, so you're getting a pure communication. I looked into a number of channels, and I found that the beliefs and thoughts and concepts and attitudes of the channel were often bleeding in and adding to or subtracting to
yeah.
the purity
yeah.
of the communication from the entity. But there is a way in which you can simply receive the information as if you were, like I'm talking to you now. It's pure, it's clean, there's nothing being added, and that's marvelous. And it's been a wonderful experience to develop that ability. You know, I used to channel all sorts of people for my wife. She'd want to talk to Elvis and or Nikolai Tesla or Bruce Lee, you know, some of her favorite people.
Uh-huh.
And found that we could do that. It's one of the things that's beautiful is that the being, the spiritual being, actually contains everything. You can tune into their life at any given point in their life in physical reality. You can talk to them when they were 5 years old, 20 years old, 50 years old, the day before they died, or how they were 20 minutes after they died, or in our counting 100 years after they died. Mm-hmm. The being contains all of this. And if you focus in on a particular aspect, you say, I want to talk to you when you were 10 years old on Earth. You could actually do that. It's quite amazing.
That is fascinating.
Right.
And you know, I should mention probably one of the individuals that I work with, as far as who is a multiple abductee, again, his experience is very very profound and spiritual, a lot like yours. But he has recently been able now to do what I would consider channeling, and I put him into trance, of course, and that somehow, you know, being in the trance state somehow makes it possible. And I'm wondering if you know, when you put someone in trance, obviously things are going on in their brain and the alpha waves get going. Do we actually change our vibratory signature in trance that makes communication easier with entities?
Yes, in a sense. We are normally in physical reality. We are in a five-sense reality, the smell, taste, hearing, so on. These are normally considered to be senses. But in a broader view of it, they are actually filters. They filter all of the energy into very narrow bands. And when we focus on these narrow bands, they actually become a five-sense trap of a sort,
mm-hmm.
meaning
mm-hmm.
that you are so focused on the sights you see, on the sounds you hear, on the smells and the tastes and the tactical feelings, and they are so gross in their wavelengths compared to the lighter, spiritual, higher frequency ones, that they tend to actually block those communications. So move a person into what you're calling a trance state. In other words, you're removing them from the constant impact of all of the information that is coming through a five-channel, five-sense system.
Exactly.
And you remove them from that, then they're no longer, the gross wavelengths are not interfering with the higher frequencies, the more spatial environments that normally occur when you're telepathically communicating. I've developed techniques and done them with people whereby they can quiet the mind, have that peace that is necessary to sense the information that's coming through.
Yes.
In fact, I'm teaching a workshop on it this December 2nd and 3rd at a convention in Las Vegas called the Free Zone Convention at the Flamingo Hotel. And one of the simple exercises is to consider that any time you think of someone, you are in communication with them.
Mm-hmm.
Just allow yourself to consider you're in communication, but do not require anything to prove that is true.
Yeah.
You consider you're in communication, and then you allow yourself to simply sit there and bask in the glory of their presence and the glory of your presence.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that without requiring any information, you'll find that the presence will grow in intensity. Whereas if you start questioning yourself, is this real, is this not real, then all of your energy is going to the question. And then you're creating a question, you're creating a doubt. And therefore, that's what's being energized, the doubt, the question.
And the doubt, I imagine, like fear, these are the great blockages to everything.
Absolutely.
In fact, there are a lot of, I'm on a big campaign to eliminate fear, which I was watching shortly before the show began. I was watching a quote, or rather a communication in Spanish from a Mayan elder, and his message was, and of course he was talking about, the Mayan calendar and how, the Western Europeans, the white people, have misinterpreted the end of the Mayan calendar to be interpreted as, doom and gloom and the end of life as we know it. But he said to not fear, and that, according to their religion and spiritual tenets, what's coming our way is a return of what they call in Spanish, they call them the grandfathers, but what they mean are the, evolved beings who were here previously and interacted with them, that there would be return of that communication. And, of course, they talk about an upgrade, which is what we have discussed with several people on the show. Do you have any feelings about this, John, or have you been getting
absolutely.
Some information from Bashar about what's coming up?
You got me all excited now.
Oh, good.
This is so exciting. You see, when these histories are translated through a fear-based mentality, or through the, we've been invited in this culture to be afraid of what was happening. Our history is controlling people through fear. There's been a tremendous amount of that. Many of the movies that have been produced by Hollywood are portraying the aliens as evil characters and all this sort of thing. And the percentage of evil, there are more stars in the sky than there are grains of sand on the beach. And if you were to represent the negatives, if you take all of the sand, all of the star systems, the negativity would be represented by about 17 grains of sand.
Yeah.
The Mayan
exactly.
is predicting not the end of the world, the end of the game of limitation, the end of the game of mastery of limitation, the death of pain, suffering, misery, the transition, the completion of the game of exploring our limitations, of exploring negativity. It is signalizing that we are in the end of that, that we are now transcending back to an awareness of who and what we really are as multidimensional beings capable of magnificence beyond anything that the human consciousness can comprehend.
Yes.
That's what's coming to the end.
And that's what's coming. And so we have to, and so this fear-based thinking, I feel like the people who perpetuate it are just like they're hanging off of a ledge. They're doing their last damnedest to try and paralyze everyone with fear. And the old guard, the greedy, ego-based old guard, I think seeks to block our evolution by inciting fear.
Absolutely. See, these people are in this mentality, and Bashar has a beautiful viewpoint of it. He goes, all of the experiences are valid. We're not judging this. Fear is one of the experiences that you can have. Like, I tried misery. I didn't like it. I gave it up. It wasn't one of my favorite things, right?
No.
So judge this. In my book, I have a concept called admire and retire. The idea is that someone creates fear. They invite you to be afraid, or your consciousness creates fear. I invite you to admire what a beautiful job these other people did of creating fear, or what a beautiful job your consciousness is doing of inviting you to be afraid. And again, it's an invitation. And if you admire it and go, oh, really nice, wow, God, did you scare the hell out of me? You did it beautifully, Wow, the idea that the world is going to go to hell, right? I completely designed a whole new theme park. I was a Disney Imagineer, and I went for years, how do you get all of this magic to the people? How do you get this philosophy of and technology and know-how to have an ongoing, wonderful life? How do you create more and more good feelings and more joy in your day-to-day life until you're moving toward a state of ongoing ecstasy, where things are beyond your wildest dreams? They can't possibly get better, and then they get better. How do you do this? What I decided to do was to design a theme park that entertained people into this. And that's my big dream now, Wonder World. Build as a living invitation to make life wonderful, coupled to all the know-how to pull it off. We've got an emotions pavilion, fascinating pavilion, in which a professor feeling, a character from another planet, is teaching a class of aliens what humans have to think in order to have the emotions that they experience. And he says, value is the key. Like us, humans value things. They value their wallet, their money, their possessions, their loved ones, their car. And when they have the idea that the value might go away, or the idea that they might not get the value that they desire, they feel fear. And that's the idea. We feel fear when we think the world's going to go to hell, I'm going to die, I'm going to suffer, America's going to go down the tubes, the value of the money is going to disappear. In other words, when we have the idea that the value will go away, we feel fear. When we have the idea that the value has already gone away, some loved one died and we cannot contact them, that's probably the most horrible thing there is the apparent absence of love. When we have the idea they're gone, we feel sad, we feel grief. If it's there was tremendous value, we have a great intensity of sadness. And when there's no more value at all, when we have the idea, oh, there's nothing really of value anymore, everything's gone to shit, everything's gone to hell, excuse my word,
feel
apathy. Apathy means there's no value. And anger is simply the idea that someone else is preventing you from getting the value that you seek. And value present is joy. And we have a whole bunch of characters who dramatize this. The shame, blame, and regret quartet. All done music.
I think I worked with them.
One of them got two heads, so it's a quartet, right?
Well, my ex-husband was in there somewhere.
High and low-tone gospel singers who are all dramatizing this idea that it is our ideas about the presence or absence of value that generates the emotions we experience moment to moment.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think this is incredibly brilliant. And, you know, as I'm sure, you know, one of the things that probably has prompted you to take this angle is that, you know, I think that the biggest changes happen in people's perspectives through the arts and entertainment.
Absolutely.
That's when people open up their heart chakra. That's when they open up their minds with a good piece of theater or a beautiful piece of music. These are the kinds of things that enable human progress.
Absolutely.
So this is a brilliant thing, John.
So exciting. In the park you can discuss philosophy with a dragon, like we are doing right now. A dragon of wisdom, right? You can telepathically attract dolphins in the Atlantis in the water humans. They have their own lake where humans are not allowed, and you're taught in the dolphin telepathy theater to put out the vibrations of love and joy and excitement that cause the dolphins to want to come and swim with you. At the United Worlds land, aliens are teleporting in and their ships are landing, and you can sit around at the crashed saucer salad bar and discuss the answers that we've been able to channel from them as to how we can think to have a glorious, ongoing, wonderful life, full of joy, full of love, full of magnificence. I mean, that's what the channeling has been so valuable, in that they are reminding us who we really are, how we can have ongoing joy, mm-hmm. what the exact nature of fear is, how to admire it and retire it. Oh, that was really nicely done, fear. Yeah, I no longer choose that. To put us in control of our own lives, that we are multidimensional beings having a human experience. And that was an experience. It was valid, but now we choose to evolve out of it back to our true nature.
Oh, marvelous, John. Well, we've got some callers here lining up who are just dying to talk to you. So I'm going to pick up a line here.
Lovely.
Okay. Let me see if I got him here. Trying to pick. Good evening. You are live on Contact. Hello?
Good evening. Hello.
Wes, how are you?
I'm
great.
Very well,
we were just talking about you.
I did.
Although John
that.
May not know that. Have you been enjoying the show?
Oh, fantastic. John, I have to say right off the top, I like what you're saying. I like you a lot. You're an amazing man.
Oh, well, thank you. It's you have to be of a similar consciousness to be able to even see and acknowledge that. And I appreciate that very much. There's nothing that destroys a ham and a performer like me like the absence of a good quality audience.
Well, I hesitated to call in because I didn't want to miss a word, actually, but Leslie referred to me a little bit ago because she's been working with me all year in terms of uncovering memories of abduction and so forth, and she talked about putting me into trance to enable me to channel better, and then you already answered that question before I called in, and I thought, well, I'm going to call in anyway and put a similar question to you, if I may.
Sure, absolutely.
How would I know, or not speaking for Leslie, but how would she or I know if I am actually channeling or not?
Okay, well, the key is to allow your imagination to be real. What you're receiving is information. Information is coming through, and that's what you know. You could call it hearsay data if you want. I heard my mind say this, or I heard an apparent alien say this. You accept the information. You don't question it. You don't go, is this real, is this not real? Because if you do, then your energy goes to the question, to creating a doubt, to creating a wonderment. You simply accept what comes. And the more you bask in the presence of the entity, and the more you allow whatever comes through to be what it is, the better it gets. At one point, I remember asking Bashar, I said, Bashar, how do I know that you're really an alien from another planet? He didn't answer the question, but what he said was fascinating. He said, quote, in your culture, you have a tradition of evaluating the source of the information rather than the value of the information itself. It matters not. I am who I say I am. If the information serves you, use it, and if it doesn't, don't. And when you're beginning to channel, that's what you want to do. Just accept what comes, and the more you accept it, the stronger and stronger, and the more real it will become, up to the point where you will have these gestalt experiences where you absolutely know who you're communicating with and that you're getting valuable information.
Mm. That's a
Wes,
dead
do you
on
actually?
Answer.
I've never asked you this, but do you actually hear?
Oh, hold on one minute. Did
oh,
that
I'm sorry.
Answer your question?
Oh, sorry, John. Yes, absolutely. And I would have to tell you, it's a perfect answer on two counts. One is I've read people like Bruce Mohn and Robert Monroe, and I think it was Mohn that says, "Let your imagination be a conduit."
Beautiful.
And so I accept that. And then the other point is Leslie and I have been working quite closely together, and I think we're rapidly approaching the place where you just described.
Oh, lovely. Mm-hmm. And Leslie, I apologize for the interruption, but I always want to make sure that the person I'm talking to received the answer that they were seeking.
Absolutely, John. Absolutely. I was actually just but the phone system isn't perfect here. There's a little bit of delay, so I didn't mean to jump in. I didn't mean to jump on your feet there. But I actually was curious. I've never asked Wes this in session, but Wes, when you are in trance and you're receiving communication from the entity that we are working with, do you hear a voice that is identifiable as a sound or frequency, or is it? Can you explain how she or she sounds to you?
Oh, that's a really great question, Leslie. And I can answer it in a way that I think John would recognize because he spoke about something similar earlier. I know her signature.
Mm.
I know her vibe. I know her signature. I've learned with you and under hypnosis, especially recently in the past couple of months or so, to know what is not your thought and is not my thought and apparently no one else's thought but hers. Does that make any sense?
Totally.
Yeah, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. You know, it's interesting. Years ago, back around, I think it was 1968, I was at Caltech, California Institute of Technology, standing outside the physics lab, looking up at the lab. And all of a sudden, I knew everything that was going on in the lab, every experiment, every person, every activity. It was an unbelievable gestalt of information that came through all at once. And it just permeated into your consciousness. And that's often the way the channeling occurs. It isn't that we're hearing a voice particularly, because that's trying to translate it into our day-to-day experiences. That's what we hear, somebody's voice. But when we allow that sense to go away or we allow it to relax, we often get a huge gestalt of information that it would take weeks to translate into language.
John, this is fantastic information for me because, you know, my next question was going to be, and I'm not going to steal the show, Leslie, so don't worry.
No, carry on, please.
My next question was going to be, you know, if you had that gestalt of information, there is no way you could have processed it in the moment. Am I right?
Absolutely. One of my, you know, you hear about these experiences of your life passes before your eyes when you die. You know, you've heard that. People say that.
Yeah.
I actually had that experience. Every single incident in this life went by. Every conversation, every happening, they were clearer in my consciousness than when they had actually occurred in physical reality, and yet they all went by in a matter of moments. And from the viewpoint that I'm talking now, which I'm tuned to a human reality talking through a body, that's impossible. How can they all go by? They didn't go by as a blur. They clicked by one. Every single incident in this life went by in a matter of moments, all crystal clear, not rushed. And from this physical perspective, that's impossible. But the proof is I experienced it. I'm not trying to prove it to anybody. That's impossible. You might be able to guide them to the experience. But once you have the experience, it's incredible. But when you come back to the physical mastery of limitation viewpoint, from that viewpoint, that's impossible.
I love the saying, mastery of limitation. I caught that early on in the show, and I wrote it down. It's like, oh, yeah, I think I could just listen to you. So if you don't mind staying on the phone for another 5 hours.
Maybe we'll do it again. Yeah, mastery of limitation is, by the way, that's an incredibly positive, amazing accomplishment. You actually mastered the ability to focus down to a narrow limit and experience life from that viewpoint. It's a valid experience. It's mastery.
Yes.
We would often think of it as derogatory, you know, oh, I'm a master of limitation. And you take a negative viewpoint, I'm limited. No, you mastered an ability to have a particular type of experience.
And then you move on, right?
Then you move on.
Right. Wow, Leslie, I really appreciate you directing the questions in the exchange here. I hope our listeners, because, you know, I'm pretty regular on the show, and they must get bored with me. I hope our listeners are really tuned in and turned on.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure the message went out, and the people that need to hear this and are hearing it. You know, that's just. Mm-hmm. I think that's just sort of the way it works. I think the call went out on various wave bands from my brain, from John's brain, from your brain to the people that are oscillating in sympathy. Mm-hmm. And I mean that physical sympathy. You know, so.
Right.
John, I just want to stay on the line, Wes, please. John, I was wondering, is Bashar communicating, as far as you know, with any other humanoid beings? Or
yes, many people through different languages in different parts of the world, yes.
Oh, my goodness. And so,
and
as you said, Bashar explained that this communication method is, in fact, incredibly common and is used, you know, in a widespread way throughout the galaxy, and we're just, you know, getting on board with it.
Yeah, the most common method of communication. You are tuning to the signature vibration of a biological entity. Distance doesn't matter. Time doesn't matter. It's like tuning to a particular carrier wave of a radio station or a television station. And when you tune to that signature vibration, all the information that's on that station is available to you.
Yes. I suppose, is it a bit similar to tuning into the Akashic Records? All of the information is out there on the subatomic quantum level, and we can access the vibration, or rather, we can utilize the vibration to access that widespread information.
Exactly. See, things are what they are defined to be. You're defining the Akashic Records as a library containing all information of anything that has ever happened. That's
yes.
the definition. You as a
yes.
spiritual being have defined it to be that, and it instantaneously becomes that. And that's its signature vibration. You can feel it. Ooh, a library that's got all of the information. Ooh, cool. Talk about it. Oh, yeah. Here I am. Oh, yeah. What do I want to know about? I want to know about how many Disneylands there are in the Milky Way galaxy, you know, or how many theme parks. Oh, there are 42,763,742 and 8 under construction.
Listen, we've got someone else calling in. Looks like from the Los Angeles area. I have two more calls from the Los Angeles area. I'm just going to pick up this next one, if I may, right now. Good evening. You are live on Contact.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Contact. How are you?
Hi. Good. I'm enjoying the show. And I wanted to ask John. Hello, John.
Hi there.
I wanted to ask if you have any experience in kind of time travel, as far as like where time just kind of seems to disappear and doesn't really exist. I mean, is time like our sort of human construct, or what is your experience in that area?
Absolutely. I've had many experiences along that. I used to teach a seminar called Time Mastery. And basically what we have done is we have taken the eternal now moment, which contains everything, and arbitrarily divided it into units, into years, minutes, seconds, and then we stress ourselves against that arbitrary structure that we created. Where in actual fact, you see, what is time? Time actually is the experience of certain ways that the physical or the reality is arranged. Like we go, how do we know what now is? Well, I've got my computer in front of me. I got my telephone in front of me. It's dark outside. It's nighttime. This is a now. But if we look back, we say, oh, I used to have an old Henry Ford car. If we think of that as the past, what are we doing? We're mentally creating a different arrangement of particles. And we go, oh, it would be really nice. I'm going to have a car that flies, like from Back to the Future. You see, we're basically simply rearranging the infinite number of arrangements that can occur. And that's truly, we can energize that as spiritual beings, and we can go to any reality we can imagine. We can go back to Rome, and we can have Cadillac cars in Rome if we like. See, there's an infinite number of possibilities, and yes, I've been blessed with having a number of those kinds of things.
So Bashar would probably tell you that time is what? Is it made up by us, or what's the situation?
Absolutely.
With time?
It is an arrangement and a sequence of actions that are created by us. George Carlin, one of my favorite comedians, had a routine once where he said, "All life is moving your stuff." You know, we get up and we move stuff off our body, and then we put other stuff on our body, and we move a piece of stuff on the toothpaste and the toothbrush, and we move it into our mouth, and then we move the particles out of our mouth. When we go on a vacation, we move a lot more stuff. And he said, "My stuff is stuff. Your stuff is shit." He said, "Please move your stuff. Your shit, so I got some place to put my stuff," right?
Yes.
It's all how we arrange stuff. You know, we sit down.
I've got to arrange stuff a lot better in my house because there's a lot of shit of my husband's that has to go.
But if you imagine, that's all I can say.
You
imagine yourself flying on a carpet with a loved one, and if you will allow that imagination to be real, you have literally created a time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, John, so time, in a sense, there has to be some sort of mutual agreement between entities. Would you say that we have to agree on a certain progression of time?
Well, it works always. The individual can create the entire reality themselves, or they can co-create it with other individuals. It's a matter of choice. Both are valid. What we have here in physical reality, we literally have a program, very much like the holodeck on Star Trek, where a program is energizing the way the physical reality will function. Much in the way a computer software program will orchestrate how your computer acts and how it performs.
It is literally
a program contained in our consciousness and in the dendrite structure of the mind that energizes this reality, much like a holodeck.
Oh, my goodness. Well, John, I can hardly believe this, but we've got about 2 minutes left on the show. And thank you so much for your call. I think is that my lovely sister on the line there?
Yes,
I knew it.
Oh, hi, Karen.
Hey, John.
Well, thank you, my dear. Thank you so much for calling in with your wonderful question.
You know, it's been an amazing show, and I think you two are really helping to, and Wes too, unlock, you know, a lot of these mysteries that are going on. I appreciate your work and your honesty and your sincerity. You're doing a beautiful job, so thank you.
And
bless you.
With that music, Karen, your music is definitely orchestrating a lot of good feelings and a lot of inspiration into the world. Thank you so much for that.
John.
Yeah,
thank you, always has.
Since the first little song she wrote on a ukulele when she could barely talk, she's always been at it.
Thank you, my dear.
All right, sweetheart. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. Bye bye now. Bye-bye. Anyway, so John, I got we have more calls, but we just don't have any time. I would love it if you would come back and do the show again not too long from now.
I'd be very happy to. Just give me a date, and we'll make it work.
I will, and I just want to thank you on behalf of myself, of course, our producer Wes, who called in, and I'm just so thrilled that we've had a chance to talk about these really uplifting and positive and exciting things that you're doing. Real quick, John, what is your website?
It is wonderworldonline.com, Wonder, WONDERWORLD, online. O-N-Line, L-I-N-E, .com. And Leslie, if I may suggest, if you have a chance, why don't you pick up the callers that called in and give them an opportunity to call back for the future, if that's possible?
I think it is possible, and I certainly will do that.
Wonderful.
All right, John, thank you again so much, and I'm going to bid you bonne nuit, adieu from Toronto, and I can't wait to see you in person.